Hello, this is Richard Davis, welcoming you to At Home This Morning, our magazine programme for older listeners, which we hope will also be of interest to the not-so-old. Coming up in the next hour, we'll be hearing about a project run by the Brighton & Hove Community Kitchen to help dementia sufferers and their carers. And also about the Preston Park Demo Garden, where much of the produce that they use is grown. We'll also be finding out about a scheme to introduce those who may not have had the chance earlier in life to the joys of playing a string instrument. And Chris English will be reviewing the latest show at the Theatre Royal. As usual, we'll be giving out various email addresses, website addresses and telephone numbers during the course of the programme, so you may like to have a pencil and paper handy so that you can write them down. So, let's get started without any further ado. Here's Maya Davis to introduce the first item.
Well, if you've been going up or down Queen's Road recently, you'll have seen the very attractive window of what appears to be a community kitchen and people cooking away behind it. So we thought it might be an idea to find out a bit more about what they do. And this turns out to be part of Brighton and Hove Food Partnership. We investigated a little bit further and found that one of the important things they do is run courses which are dementia-friendly and are focused on cooking and gardening. So we're very pleased today to have Caroline Whiteman in the studio, and she's going to tell us a little bit more about both of those. So welcome, Caroline.
Hello, Maya. Thanks for having me.
Now, can you tell us about these courses and what they do? Maybe start with the cookery one.
Yeah, we have been running courses for those living with dementia for the past 3 years, and we're very happy that we are able to continue some of that work. The new cookery programme that we're offering to residents of Brighton and Hove is a monthly cookery club where those living with dementia and their carers can come together and cook a delicious meal in a very relaxed way and sit and enjoy the food and eat together.
And is that suitable for everybody who's living with dementia?
We generally invite those who have mild to moderate symptoms of dementia because we find that we're best placed to support those people. But also, in terms of a well-being experience, this is the group that will derive the most enjoyment and the most kind of meaningful experience from engaging with cookery.
Can you say a little bit more about what you actually do in those sessions? You mentioned cooking and eating a meal. What sort of meals, for example?
Well, the meals are dictated, I suppose, somewhat by the tastes of the group, the seasonal availability of produce. And one of the things we're going to trial with this next round is using up surplus food. So leftover ingredients from commercial courses that we run in our kitchen, it's a great way for us to come together and to be able to use those ingredients in creative and innovative ways for participants to demonstrate the skills they may have and pick up some new ones along the way.
Do you find that they have quite a lot of skills?
Yeah, time and again I have been amazed in the group by people who maybe are somewhat withdrawn because that can be a behaviour that starts to creep in with a dementia diagnosis, suddenly displaying incredible knife skills or really impressive scone-making abilities through the courses when, if you were to ask them, you know, can you make scones or do you enjoy baking, you might have no indication that these abilities are kind of lurking beneath the surface.
So, in fact, what's happening is that skills that they've got more or less embedded in their brains come to the surface, even if they've lost the power to recall that they possess those skills.
Exactly that. It's slightly magical when those situations arise. And I think sometimes the participants themselves are surprised at how proficient they are in various areas in the kitchen, because it may be that they haven't cooked for themselves for years and years. There's a fear that comes with a dementia diagnosis. Family and well-meaning carers often think it's not safe for that person to use an oven or a hob, for example. And so because their confidence themselves has taken a huge knock, they withdraw from those activities. And by joining the cookery group, what we offer is an entirely safe and supportive space where people can realise that they are still very capable of doing lots of things that they may have kind of decided that actually they don't do anymore.
That sounds great. What does it do for the carers?
This is an interesting thing that we've observed over the years we've been doing this, that the carers are able to see the people that they care for in a different light. I think sometimes as a carer, what happens is because your day-to-day is taken up with meeting that person's needs, looking after them, every aspect of their well-being, it's very easy to forget in that situation that this person does have skills, knowledge, and may even know more than you or have a better understanding than you or the carer of how to do something. So we've learned some really wonderful things from people who've come on our courses. Had we asked them at the beginning, you know, would you be able to show us this, that, and the other, they probably would have said no. But through the act of cooking and through the act of chatting and the social that comes with the experience of being part of the group, these things just naturally present themselves in a very unpressurised way.
Now, you say you source the food from a variety of places. Do you grow any of that yourself?
As we move into the summer months, the aspiration for the community kitchen is that we will start to bring in produce from a couple of our growing projects. We've got a community garden at Preston Park, long-running, long-established and very popular garden there. And although it's a small garden, we do get gluts of things. So anyone who grows will know the familiarity of the courgettes that just seem to never stop producing. And we also have a larger space at Saunders Park, which is a newer project, which is also starting to produce. This is a quiet time of year for produce, but as we go further into the growing season, we would definitely hope that some of that lovely, fresh and local produce can make its way into the kitchen. Where we're unable to grow the stuff ourselves, we work with local producers to ensure the freshest and most local produce available for the courses.
And do you run any courses on gardening?
Courses per se, actually no, but what we do offer is ongoing community gardening, where people can learn a huge deal about growing food at the two projects I mentioned. And we also work very closely with projects all over the city. There are many community gardens across the city of Brighton and Hove, which similarly offer the opportunity to upskill in growing food particularly. So people can kind of learn on the job, so to speak.
And what about people with dementia who used to be keen gardeners? Do you do anything for them?
We have a gardening programme starting in May in the most spectacular hidden garden in Brighton. I don't want to give away too many details, but it did used to be a market garden for the open market. So it's a very special place. And we run a weekly course there, 12-week programme we offer. And we will be doing seed sowing, cultivation, harvesting seeds, cutting flowers, making bird feeders, all manner of lovely things for the garden, which can be tailored to all kinds of abilities and also all kinds of physical abilities as well, because we have a beautiful indoor space we can use. So if people can sit down and relax doing these things, it takes the pressure off a little bit. So people don't need to imagine that they're going to be coming to the gardening group, be handed a spade and expected to dig a trench, for example.
Good. That could be a bit of a disaster.
Well, I think it could put a few people off.
Yeah. So how do people apply for this course and the cookery course?
Well, first of all, Maya, what I'd like to say is that both courses are completely free. Mm-hmm. We're funded by the CCG, the Clinical Commissioning Groups, in Brighton and Hove, because they realise what value these kind of activities can have for people with a dementia diagnosis. So people do need to apply, even for the monthly cookery club. They need to fill in an application form. That can be downloaded online, but if that's not your thing, you can give us a telephone call and we will send you out an application form through the post, which you can fill in. The other possibility is that you can call in and somebody from our team can go through the application form with you over the phone, just so that we have, for example, emergency contact details and also information about the best way that we can support you to have the best possible experience with us.
So does that phone call have to be made by the person in the early stages of dementia just after the diagnosis, or can a carer do it?
Either or, whoever feels most confident to do so. So would this be a good time to give you the number?
I think it probably would.
Our telephone number, which is the Brighton and Hove Food Partnership, is 01273 234 807, and our website address is bhfood.org.uk. And if you use the search function, which is very obvious on the website, and put in the word dementia, you will go straight to the information that you need about both the gardening programme and the cookery club.
And when do you intend to start these courses?
The gardening group will be starting in the middle of May. It's a Tuesday morning, May the 14th, and we would like to start inviting applications from now so that we have a sense of who we're going to be having from the beginning. But you can apply to join after we have begun, and you'll be offered a 12-week block from then on. We'll end sometime in October. And the cookery group is going to start in June. It's going to be the second Thursday of the month in the afternoon, June, July, August, and so on. And again, we are taking applications for the cookery club from now.
So those both sound like very good things for people to get involved in and start planning to work on.
Yeah, I would say so. And also just to make the point that if people feel that they would like to attend independently and feel that that's something that they're capable of doing, getting to the community kitchen, for example, under their own steam, we wouldn't want anyone to feel they can't come because they don't have officially a carer yet, or their carer can't come with them on that day. We're very much wanting people to access at whatever point works for them. And it may be that we just need to have a slightly longer phone call about how we can ensure that people are getting safely to and from the venues. But people are invited to attend with a carer, or if they're still using buses independently around the city, for example, if they want to come on their own, that's also very welcome.
What about if they have mobility problems or eyesight or hearing problems?
The community kitchen is fully accessible and we are a dementia-friendly space. So we will endeavour to meet everybody's needs where they're at. The garden is a little bit more complicated because in the way that gardens are, it has some higgledy-piggledy places, it has some slightly uneven paths, and it's actually quite a steep slope even to get into the garden. So what I would suggest is if you have any concerns about mobility, eyesight, hearing, any of those things, give us a call and we can talk it through with you and establish whether or not the gardening group's going to work for you, or the cookery club, or both.
And can people bring dogs?
Very good question. As a dog lover myself, I would love to say yes. But actually, the garden space that we use is a no-dog zone. There is plenty of wildlife to keep you occupied, so you won't miss them. There are resident foxes living under the shed, but unfortunately we can't have dogs in that group. And obviously, in the kitchen, it wouldn't be appropriate. So I'm afraid it's a no.
What about guide dogs?
I think we would be able to make an exception for guide dogs. But again, do talk it through with us and I will make sure that we have permission from the person who owns the garden, who's actually a private Brighton and Hove resident, just to check that that was fine. But we want to make these groups as accessible as possible, so I'm sure we can find a way.
Thank you very much indeed, Caroline.
Thanks, Maya. Thanks for having me.
Maya Davis was talking to Caroline Whiteman of the Brighton and Hove Food Partnership about the dementia-friendly cookery and gardening courses that they'll shortly be running. The gardening course starts on Tuesday, May the 14th, and the cookery course starts on Thursday, June the 13th, but they're already happy to receive applications to take part in the courses. You can find out more from the Food Partnership's website, which is at www.bhfood.org.uk. That's www.bhfood.org.uk. Or you can phone them on Brighton 234807. That's 01273 234807. Well, in the course of that interview, Caroline Whiteman mentioned that some of the food that they use in their cookery projects comes from the Preston Park Community Garden. Back in 2016, we actually ran a piece on the Preston Park Community Garden, or Demonstration Garden, as it was actually called at the time. Back then, I spoke to one of the leading volunteers there, Lynn McKenzie, who works very hard in the garden despite the fact that she's in her mid-70s. And I began by asking her how the Preston Park Demonstration Garden differs from any other garden.
It's actually a garden that's there to demonstrate how you can perhaps garden on a balcony, garden in pots. There's a small forest garden there, or a permaculture garden, as they call it, where you don't have to actually do much weeding and that. Everything feeds each other. And then there are small raised beds. It's just really what it says on the tin. It's a demonstration garden. It's also for people with disabilities. They come round and sometimes put seeds in and that sort of thing. It's wheelchair friendly in one part of it. And they do cut and cook to show people how you can feed from the ground, so to speak. I actually don't do a lot of gardening because although I prefer the design and the maintenance, and so I tend to be the maintenance person. We've just built three new raised beds, and we've got one that we put posts on each corner so that people who have difficulty bending down can hold on to bend down to do it. And we've now got a tabletop that we're going to put on the top of the four legs so that you can also have a cup of tea or do seedlings there.
That's a good idea.
Well, it's quite good there because I must admit they do tend to let me have a bit of free range there. As long as it's voted by everybody, I seem to be able to do mostly what I want.
So the main purpose of the garden is to demonstrate.
To demonstrate,
how,
yeah.
How to grow things.
There is a little mini sort of balcony there. It's just a bit of decking with a railing along the front, and then we put the plant pots on to demonstrate what you could do on a small balcony. Then there's a potted area where they've used dustbins and anything else that's available and what you could grow in them, as well as the proper raised beds and also, as I say, the permaculture. I like the permaculture bit best because I tend to prefer things slightly wild.
So what is permaculture?
Well, it says permanent culture, actually. It's a forest garden where each plant feeds the next plant, as it would in a forest. You just keep them tidy and make sure that the trees are, you know, kept indecent, and just let life get on with it. Take out any invasive weeds, but most of the time it seems to look after itself.
So that's primarily trees, is it?
No. It's bushes, fruits, raspberries. We've got quite a bit of rhubarb there. Raspberries, blackcurrants, blackberries. There are trees there. We've got a row of, I think, apples and pears. I'm not too sure what's on them, actually. And we've got grapes going up. We've just built an area for people to sit with grapevines going over the top. The food itself is for the people who work in the garden and for anybody who visits. It seems to work very well. And touch wood, we haven't actually had any vandalism there.
That's very good.
We had two drunks, we think, one night because they crashed into a few things and flattened it, but it wasn't a deliberate vandalism. We had a problem last year. Someone was cutting off the runner beans at the bottom and replanting the stems, which was a really odd thing to do. And so, obviously, the runner beans just died. But we managed to stop that by putting fencing and all sorts of stuff around the runner beans, not around the garden.
Can anyone grow things in the garden?
No, they do rotation gardening and all that sort. That's all organised by the Food Partnership. Anyone can volunteer.
And how do people go about it if they want to volunteer?
Actually, if they go on the websites, if you put in Preston Park Demo Garden, you'll probably get the information. If they go on the website, they'll be told when they can go, etc., etc.
More basic thing, which I ought to have asked earlier, actually, where is the garden?
It's behind the rotunda. It's the woods at the back of Preston Park come along, and the rotunda's there, and it's in between the two.
Are there courses run at the garden, or is it just a case of people coming by and seeing what's happening?
I think the Food Partnership run courses, because it's actually under their jurisdiction. That comes under their, you know, umbrella.
Mm.
We don't actually do any courses there. But there are people who know what they're doing. And so if people come along as a volunteer, they will be helped and taught.
Right, so it's a sort of apprenticeship.
Sort of, yeah.
And do you get much feedback from members of the public about
Quite a lot, actually. People pass in, they often walk in and ask about the area, and we take them round and show them what's there. There are little notices up telling people what it's all about. And, my biggest problem is dogs. Dogs go in there, and unfortunately they leave parcels, and not all dog owners are responsible. But, so I've got a bit of a thing about that. But other than that, most people seem to respect the gardens quite well.
And the fruit and vegetables you produce, you were saying it goes to the volunteers?
Yes, the volunteers, and then it goes back to also to the Food Partnership office, and I think they use them in various things, because the Food Partnership includes, I think they're called charity cooks or something. They do courses where they teach people to cook, and I think some of the stuff might possibly go there. I'm not too sure of the whys and wherefores. I don't take a lot of the stuff because I've got a little bit of a garden, do my own thing. So it is very, very good for you to do these things, I think, because gardening, they've proved to be very good for the mental health, haven't they? Mm. You know, I can do all the same things as I could when I was 15, 16. I'm just a bit slower. You know, and I think if you can go through life like that, I'm still waiting to fall apart, and it hasn't started happening yet. I'm sure something will fall off soon, but at the moment, touch wood, things are okay.
Thanks very much, Lynn.
My pleasure.
I was talking to Lynn McKenzie about the Preston Park Demo Garden. If you'd like to find out more about the garden, you can have a look on their website. It's actually a sub-page of the website of the Brighton and Hove Food Partnership, and it's quite a long address, but I'll give it to you anyway. It's bhfood.org.uk/directory/preston-park-demo-garden. Demo is D-E-M-O, as you probably know. I'll give you that again. It's bhfood.org.uk/directory/preston-park-demo-garden. Alternatively, you can go along to the garden itself. It's behind the rotunda in Preston Park, and if you go on a Wednesday morning, there'll definitely be somebody there who will be able to tell you all about it. You can, of course, go at other times, but I'm told that Wednesday morning is the best. If you'd like to volunteer to help out at the garden, then once again Caroline Whiteman at the Brighton and Hove Food Partnership is the person to talk to. You can phone her on the number I gave you earlier, which was 01273 234 807. Or you can email her, and her email address is caroline@bhfood.org.uk. That's caroline@bhfood.org.uk. I've got another guest in the studio today. Her name is Bella Emerson, and she's responsible for an organisation called Silver Strings. We've spoken to Bella before, a few years ago in fact, but the organisation's expanded quite a bit since then, so I thought it would be worth getting her back in to find out what the situation is now. Welcome back, Bella. Let's start with the basics. Can you tell us what Silver Strings is?
Silver Strings is Brighton and Hove's very own latest starter community string band.
The use of the name Silver suggests it might be aimed primarily at older people, is that right?
That's right. For many years we have been an over 50s group, and in the middle of 2018 we had our first player who was aged just under 50, and we currently have another player, a different player, who is aged just under 50. So we are primarily for older people, yes. We set up in 2013, and it was a 9-week pilot to assess whether it was ever too late to learn. The story behind this is that I'm a cello player, and I used to carry my cello around with me on the bus a lot. And I'd meet people who'd say, oh, I wish I'd learned to play something. And I heard that so often that I thought, well, is there a cut-off point at which people can learn an instrument? So I set up a 9-week pilot project at West Hill Hall, let lots of people know, Age UK, let the community know about it. And we had 6 people turn up, all of whom were complete beginners to making music. And then the 9 weeks passed and everybody was really enthusiastic about continuing. So we then moved venue, and then a year later we were at the Bright Home, where we've been ever since. The way that we started off with people being completely new to music making, so everybody was aged over 50. And at the time people were aged between 50 and 70. We were given a very, very small grant by the Cooperative Membership Fund to hire some instruments from Ackerman Music. So we had some cellos, some violins and some violas. And I spent a lot of time thinking about how we could play the instruments together without requiring any particular technical knowledge. So we used a lot of open strings, and I'll come back to this idea of open strings in a little while. So we used a lot of open strings and pizzicato. For any of your listeners who don't know what pizzicato is, that's plucking the strings. So people were encouraged to try the different types of instrument, the cello, the viola and the violin. And then as the weeks went on, people learnt the names of the strings and then started to use the bow and then started to place their fingers on the string. I think in the first 9 weeks we got to placing one finger on the string. So rather than having just 4 open strings, we then had a first finger on each string, which is another 4 strings. That was a very exciting moment when we had 8 notes all of a sudden to play with. There's a lot you can do with 8 notes with stringed instruments. There's a lot you can do with 4 as well. So we spent a lot of time working on listening and working on rhythm and working on communicating, using these sounds that are easy for everybody to make, I would say. We've always said, as long as you can place a finger on a string, then you can play with silver strings. And we've been at the Bright Helm since 2014. Initially, we were given a grant via the Bright Helm Small Grants Scheme, which allowed us to hire the activities hall for a period to break even. And so for the first year, we had between 9 and 10 people coming along every week. And then since then, the numbers have grown. And at the moment, we have 17 people coming along to silver strings. So that runs every Tuesday morning. And we have an open session for new players on the first Tuesday of the month. We're also, in the last year, I've been very excited about this. We've been awarded a grant, a very small grant, but very useful grant by the Homity Trust for 2 years running, which has meant that we've been able to offer a bursary scheme. So for anybody on a lower income, can come along for half price, which is really important to us, that people are able to access it, not just only people who have a certain amount of financial security behind them.
Obviously, your aim, as you say, is to get people, as many people playing as possible. Mm. So presumably it can't be that expensive?
The cost is £12.50 per week, payable monthly. And then for the bursary scheme, it's half that price.
And does that include actually hiring the instrument?
People can use an instrument for as long as they want. If people come along on a Tuesday morning, the first Tuesday of the month, for a trial session, an open session, they can come for free and try an instrument out. And then we can continue to bring that instrument for them if they want to. They want to continue. We can't lend them out, unfortunately, so we invite people to either hire an instrument from Ackerman's Music, which I think is £30 for 3 months for cello, slightly less for violins. And sometimes people, particularly for violins, people see them turning up secondhand for under £50. Now, we've realised for quite a long time that those amounts of money are prohibitively expensive. So we try and offer through Open Strings, which is our parent organisation, Open Strings Music, we try and offer as many free-to-access workshops and sessions as we possibly can. But Silver Strings is almost exclusively funded through people playing, and then obviously paying organisations paying for our performances as well. So in the last few years, we've played on the bandstand a couple of times. We've played on the pavilion lawns. We've played, I'm trying to think where else we played. We were filmed for Sky TV.
Right.
We played in the Royal Pavilion for one of the Mayor's Christmas receptions. We play in social centres, lunch clubs, things like that all over Brighton. So we get around.
And what sort of music do you play?
We play some folk tunes as well as some popular tunes. We play a little bit, a few classical themes, but mainly at the moment, because our music is suggested by our players on the whole, we are at the moment exploring lots of pop music, film themes, which is very exciting. That's something people really get interested in. That's lovely to arrange as well. I do all the arrangements, so I love doing those arrangements. And sometimes we arrange between us, so we'll think about a piece of music that's in a fairly basic form, perhaps with different parts for the cellos, the violins and the violas. And then obviously for newer players, we accept people who are complete beginners still, even though some of our players are more experienced than that now, because they've been coming and playing with us for quite a long time, 5-6 years. I arrange the parts for all these different levels, including people who've never touched an instrument before. And so we have the basic form, the simple form of how we can all play the piece together, but then we'll discuss how we might end it, or what dynamics we want, how we want to make it more dramatic, or how we want to create more impact, or what actually we're hoping to achieve through playing the music. So part of what we do, a large part of what we do, is playing sheet music, and because of the performing, but also in our sessions we spend a lot of time improvising, composing music, learning by ear, so things that make us well-rounded as musicians. So it's not just about sitting in front of a piece of music and playing it. And the other thing about Silver Strings really is it's very sociable. So as a result of people coming along, they now there's at least two pairs or trios of people who meet up at the weekends to play together, and also people go to concerts and gigs and other events together as a result of coming along to the group, which is lovely for me, I must admit, to think of all these other things that happen in a sort of ripple effect, I suppose, as a result of people coming along. But ultimately, I think what we've managed to achieve so far with Silver Strings is that people come along and feel safe enough to explore. And I think people who come along and try an instrument for the first time, I think there's a lot of courage in that. If people, for example, have been told at an early age, and we meet a lot of people, not just in Silver Strings, but in our other projects as well, people who are now retired, who were told very early on that they couldn't sing or that they weren't able to play an instrument. People have carried that with them all their lives. So I think it takes a lot of courage to come along and say, right, well, I don't think I can do this, but I really want to give it a go. And then to find, hopefully, that the atmosphere is really friendly and that people are supportive, and that they want to come back, and then over a period of time that their confidence grows. And that's more than musical confidence. And for me as a facilitator, that's very exciting. And obviously, and also for our assistants and volunteers as well.
Yes, in the past there was far, far too much in the way of children at school being told they couldn't sing and they were tone deaf or whatever, and it's just not true.
Absolutely. Certainly my experience of learning and singing at school, I was told I couldn't sing at school. And I came from, thankfully, I feel very fortunate for this, but I'm very grateful, but I came from a musical family, so I was able to try out various instruments, and I feel very lucky for that. But I was always told I couldn't sing, and it was when I was in my 20s I started to sing, and it felt very liberating, you know. But I think that certainly for, let's say, for a school choir, so I'm trying to think about my music teacher when I was 8 years old, and I think that probably she wanted to present something which sounded in a particular way, which didn't really allow for voices that were different or needed some other framework around them. So for me as a community musician, I work in a very different way, and I've been trained to work in ways that we bring along where we are and what we have at the moment. So it's very much about experiencing the moment and about seeing what comes from the moment. And that's really exciting because we end up in places, all of us, that we weren't expecting. So somebody might make something that they thought was a mistake that they didn't mean to make. But what does that sound actually, where could that sound go? What does that mean? What does the person next to them hear when that sound is made? How can we make use of that in an arrangement? So if somebody makes a squeaky bow noise, okay, maybe they didn't want that in the middle of Moon River, let's say, but they might want that as an effect in something like, let's say, the end of California Dreaming, where we have this beautiful section where it sounds like the wind blowing. I think there's something very precious about the moment, and music and improvising and playing allows us to be in the moment together as a group, and that enhances our well-being as well.
If people are interested in trying out a string instrument, for example, how can they get in touch with you?
We run an open session on the first Tuesday of every month, which is 9:30 to 11:30 a.m., and that's at the Brighthelm Activities Hall. People need to book onto that session so that we know to bring them an instrument. So I'll give you the email address and the phone number in a moment. We're also running jam sessions, which are open to people of any ability, including complete beginners, and that's people of any age. And we're running those bi-monthly at Community Base. The next one of those is the 27th of April between 2 and 4 p.m. That's a Saturday afternoon. We do have a limited number of instruments for people to play. Again, if people contact us about that, we can bring something along. We also have some performances coming up and a workshop at Brighton Museum on the 4th of May in the morning, and that's part of Brighton Museum's Music and Wellbeing Day, and there will be some other wonderful music there, including some films of people participating in community music activities, and it's all about the wellbeing and the great feeling that we have when we play music together.
So that would be a good way of people finding out all about it, wouldn't it? Coming along to that.
It really, really would, yes. It'd be lovely to see people there.
And they'll be able to hear what the results you've achieved over the years.
Very much so. If people are interested in what we do, they can visit our website, which is www.openstrings.co.uk. If they'd like to email directly, they can email info@openstrings.co.uk, or they can give us a call on 01273 569096.
Bella, thank you very much.
You're very welcome, Richard. It's lovely to be here.
I was talking to Bella Emerson about her Silver Strings project. If you'd like to find out more, you can go to their website, which is www.openstrings, that's open strings, not silver strings, .co.uk/silver-strings. I'll give you that again. It's www.openstrings.co.uk/silver-strings. Or you can ring them on Brighton 569096. That's 01273 569096. Well, now my co-presenter, Chris English, is somebody that you can't really keep away from the Theatre Royal when they're performing a musical. And he's been to see the latest show that's on there. He's coming to the studio to review it for us. So, over to you, Chris.
If you can remember having a Sony Walkman, complete with those fiddly cassette tapes, and you watched Bucks Fizz win the Eurovision Song Contest back in 1981, singing, of course, Making Your Mind Up. And you also had back-combed hair and wore odd neon-coloured socks. Then Club Tropicana, the musical, which is on at the Theatre Royal this week, and if you're listening to the repeat, you've missed it, will surely bring back many happy memories of the 1980s as the young and highly energetic cast, headed by X Factor winner Joe McElderry, sing and dance their hearts out. Club Tropicana is, needless to say, a full-on bubblegum musical in which the storyline, such as it is, purely exists to string the music together and basically comprises a tale about a small hotel battling to win a competition despite sabotage from a rival establishment. Plus, of course, the predictable boy-meets-girl romance along the way, all centred around that Club Tropicana. In keeping with the more liberal times of some 40 or so years ago, the innuendos come thick and fast and should appeal to those of us who were around at the time when there was no such thing as PC political correctness and all we wanted to do was have a good time, laugh at the jokes, particularly those that were perhaps slightly more risque. However, in this situation, the story doesn't really matter too much, as it's the 80s music that this fast-paced show is all about. And the songs, and like Mamma Mia, but perhaps not quite in that league, it rattles through numbers like Just Can't Get Enough, Girls Just Want to Have Fun, The Look of Love, and Jump, in typical high-kicking style that has the audience on their feet, cheering and asking for more. In addition to Joe McElderry, the cast includes some well-known faces and voices, including Karina Hind, who has been in Matilda and Mamma Mia, Amel Berrabah, who was a sugar babe, Neil McDermott from EastEnders, Selen Chung-Jones, Chess and School of Rock, and not forgetting the crazy genius of Kate Robbins, who kept those laughs coming with her tongue-in-cheek buffoonery. So if you're a fan of 80s music or just want to have a great night out, well, you'll leave the theatre with a skip in your step, then Club Tropicana is the show for you, either at the theatre or this week or later on the tour when it will be at Woking and Southampton. Full details from either box office in New Road or online at www.atgtickets.com.
Thanks, Chris. And that brings us to the end of our programme for this time. Thank you very much for listening. I hope you've enjoyed everything you've heard in this edition of At Home This Morning, our magazine programme for older listeners. There'll be another edition in a fortnight's time. That'll be presented by Chris English, and I'll be back with you in 4 weeks. In the meantime, if you'd like to get in touch with me to let me know what you think of the programme, or perhaps to suggest items you might like me to cover in future editions, I'd love to hear from you. There are two ways of getting in touch. You can either contact me by email at the following address, info@greymattersproductions.org.uk. That's info, spelled I-N-F-O, at greymattersproductions, which is typed all as one word, .org.uk. Or you can contact me via the Radio Reverb website. If you go to the website and find the page that's devoted to At Home This Morning, you can send me an email from there. And whichever method you choose, I'd love to hear from you. It now only remains for me, Richard Davis, on behalf of Grey Matters Productions, who make this programme for Radio Reverb, to thank everyone who's taken part in the programme. Once again, to thank you for listening, and until we meet again, to wish you all the very best. Goodbye.
At Home This Morning has been a Grey Matters production for Radio Reverb.